Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Spread. I'm your host, Carrie Sikender, and today I'm joined by Tony Hollingsworth. Tony is Senior Director of Strategy at Laundry Service. Laundry Service is part of Wasserman, and Tony has worked with some of the world's most beloved sports brands like Gatorade, Nike, Jordan, NBA. I'm really excited to have this conversation with Tony because he has a lot of big agency experience, which is very different than my long career of design in the small studio world. So this should be a really fun conversation about how creative comes to life in sports. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Carrie, thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Awesome. First of all, I love your outfit. For those of you who can only see audio, Tony is wearing full Olympic gear, including my favorite Olympic look of all time, the Lithuania tie-dye. What year is that from?
Pretty sure this was the 92 Olympics in Barcelona.
I love it. I mean, the 90s are back, but it's just...
in full swing.
It was so good. So good. I would actually love to start by talking about this campaign that you did with Gatorade. And two of the pieces that I watched had Paige Buchers and Caitlin Clark. And I'm just curious what it was like to develop that campaign, if you could tell us about it. Favorite moments and kind of the creative process overall.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold you. That's one of my favorite campaigns to date.
Amazing.
Not just because it was cool to create something for Gatorade, but I'm a huge women's basketball fan as well. So it was cool to see the next generation of stars really take stage. But the campaign was You Can Too, which we really leaned into the equity that Gatorade established with its past campaigns of Is It In You? And obviously they brought that back, but this was before that. We challenged both Caitlin and Paige to be a part of that long history. And part of that long history was about the products that kind of raised them in a certain way. Like, they both have humble Midwest upbringings. And while that is really cool, we want to capture that and really inspire the next generation of young women to see themselves in those same shoes. So they allowed us and were willing to trust and be a part of that storytelling process. And we made something special out of it. So it was really rooted in their own upbringings and kind of contextualizing that story.
Mm-hmm. And did you get to work with them directly?
We had a couple calls with Paige's team specifically. She's actually a part of the Wasserman family. So we got to talk to her, kind of build out her storyline and really tell a deep and rich narrative. I think the more interesting thing about that whole process is obviously at that time, both Paige and Caitlin were NIL athletes for Gatorade. They're some of the first NIL athletes signed by Gatorade, and it allowed us like a portal into storytelling for them. Oftentimes, you really see most brands talking about their stars and pitching their athletes at like the highest levels. And what we also see as Gatorade is that doesn't always connect to the next generation of fans. They view it as inauthentic or fake or not something that's super aspirational. We wanted to kind of root that in the complexities of being a youth ascending star and talent with all that notoriety, all that fanfare, but also all that critique resting on your shoulders. And what do you do and how can you live up to it? And really showing, especially young girls, that you can take on this challenge, this burden, and really transform it into something that you are interested in and can embrace and push to the main stage with your talent.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was also just really fun as a fan to see the footage of them as kids, like the home video footage. Did you get to go through that footage? And were you part of that creative process to storyboard out the ads?
I did not go through all the footage. It was a bunch of footage. And
well, some of it, yeah.
Yeah, some of it. That stuff is really hard to come by. You think like the Gatorade footage of them or drinking, all that kind of stuff is like easy, readily available because they probably played so much and so much shape of them. But our team kind of combed through that. And yes, I was a part of that storyboarding process, sitting down with the creative team and being like, should we add this? How do we tell this? All that kind of stuff. I was a part of that process, but we have an amazing production team that kind of owns that. So I was more of a fly on the wall versus a person choosing the clips.
Yeah, I think it's just so fun to see the selected footage. Personally, I was like, wow, they were so good as very young children. Footage of me as a kid playing soccer would be really laughable.
Me as a kid playing basketball, even, oh my God, that would be.
Totally, totally. What was it like? I know you're a women's basketball fan, so am I. What did this project, what kind of personal meaning did it have for you?
Yeah, I think a lot of my work lately and I mean lately as in like the last couple of years, has really been focused on the youth athlete space and trying to connect to them. I ran Division One track and obviously a college athlete in that way. So being able to connect with the kids and try to be able to tell their stories that kind of I wanted to see reflected when I was running means like a great deal. I don't know. I think, again, looking at the landscape today, there's very few athletes that kind of move the needle. I'm not going to throw any names out there because he has some great listeners and I don't want to offend anybody. But when you look at the women's basketball space, they are the new rock stars. They're the most aspirational. You look at, obviously, a Caitlin Clark, a Paige, a Juju. But then you turn your side source to W and you look at someone like an Asia or Stewie, like they're kind of transforming and they're capturing the hype of like 90s NBA. It feels like a privilege to be a part of those stories and like pushing those to the forefront. So anything to inspire, like honestly, a marginalized group within the sports space, that's what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same. Totally. And I think you captured it perfectly. It's been wild for me to see because I moved to Berlin a year and a half ago. I'd been going to Liberty games in Brooklyn for years and I'd go and it would be like, all right, he's got this Liberty sweatshirt too. It would be like so few people in the stands. You watch the final this year and it's completely full. And I'm just like, whoa, this has changed drastically within the past year. And I mean, there's all like speculation, like, is this the Caitlin Clark effect? Is it whatever? I mean, whatever it is, it's just so amazing to see and also hear from you as someone working in the marketing creative side of the space that for you, it feels like this enthusiasm of 90s NBA. I grew up in Chicago with the Bulls. I was a huge Bulls fan. What an amazing time to be working in space.
Yeah. And similar, right? Also grew up in Chicago in the 90s.
Oh, you did?
With the Bulls.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it's crazy to think about me and my wife were fortunate enough to be a part of the Liberty Parade. Shout out Lindsay Polis, that amazing team. And I remember going to like the 98 parade and it's a weird juxtaposition because the streets were full. Confetti was flying and it felt like something out of a movie. And I think even if I was just on the sidelines and watching and celebrating the team, it would have felt even more special too. So it's big right now. And I think that's like a huge inspiration about how do you capture that feeling? How do you reverse engineer that feeling?
Yeah, totally. Perfect segue. So when we first talked, you shared with me kind of your approach to, I mean, tell me if this is putting it too bluntly, but basically getting what you want. reverse engineering a problem, which is to me like an intellectual name for it. And I'm curious to hear about, you've accomplished a lot, and I'm curious to hear about how your process into solving problems that haven't happened yet in this way of kind of achieving something, how that works. Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, that means a lot coming from you because you've also accomplished a lot, so I'm going to take it. Of course. Reverse engineering a problem. That is, I mean, the nice way, the more blunt way of saying it is kind of getting the result that you want or getting what you want. But day to day, I'm a strategist by trade. I'm a listener, I'm a watcher, I'm a learner, and I take a lot of my inspiration from a lot of different places, those insights. And for those who know me super personally, they know that I'm a big Pharrell Williams fan, like a huge Pharrell fan. He had this conversation with Rick Rubin a couple of years ago. He was talking about how him and his then production partner, Chad Hugo, would go about concepting songs. And it was something like they will listen to a song and think about how it made them feel. They'll look at a building and think about how it made them feel. And what they do was kind of recreate that feeling, trying to reproduce the feeling without making the same thing. And that's kind of the approach that I take to life. It's what is the desired emotional reaction? And how do I want my audience, myself, whomever, to experience it, and then super serve them those inputs. And that gives me back something. I think a good example of that in the work is we did some stuff for Mitchell and Ness recently. For y'all who don't know and didn't grow up in like the early 2000s, those were the throwback jerseys. That was kind of like the nostalgia era. And it was really cool. This work debuted at Fanatics Fest this past year, but essentially, Mitchell and Ness want to reintroduce their brand, nodding to their iconic heritage and kind of telling this legacy story. So we started at the end. We wanted them to take away that it's heritage. There's this lasting legacy. They are part of different sports leagues, and we wanted them to be associated with the longevity, like the quality of the product as well. So how do we push that into the future? We do that through innovation. So we started there. What that manifested into was this emotionally charged journey into the day in the life of a dry cleaner owner. We wanted to be able to tell an intergenerational story and connect with today's consumer, but we didn't want to leave our past consumers in the past. We want to bring them along with us. So we told these deep and layered narratives to elicit that emotional reaction. So you're getting on the train at different points in the stop, but you're all going in the same direction. That's like a microcosm of kind of the way that I try to work within the bounds of the day-to-day work. Yeah, that's my approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. It's interesting to think about the emotion you want people to have as the target, and then how do you reverse engineer that or tell the story to suit that? Often you hear like, that's not usually the end goal that I would hear. So it's interesting to hear it framed that way, because I mean, at the end of the day, that's what marketing is. It's creating an emotional response in someone to get them to connect with something.
That's interesting. How do you approach it? Because now I'm kind of curious about that.
Yeah, I think I'm doing a similar thing. I do think about, of course, what the problem is and how to solve it. But it's more about what are their needs and interests rather than, and like the emotion part is kind of secondary. We want this brand to feel quirky and playful and approachable, but it's like kind of a second step after it's like, what is their audience? Where are they? What are they doing? What would speak to them? I just like the comparison with Pharrell and thinking about capturing an emotion first before something else that's more, maybe something more tangible.
I think that's a super valid approach. And I've taken that a couple times as well. To the emotional part, there's something in it when you look at a Nike ad. Let's just go there. Mm-hmm. You see a Nike ad. And the way that I view Nike ads is like they're all trying to elicit an emotional response. And the best ones do it in a unique way without redoing the ad. I think some of the not so great ones recreate the same thing. And those things fall flat because you see through the veneer. And I think that's a matter of not contextualizing what the audience needs in the moment and where the culture is driving them emotionally. But definitely hear your approach as well.
Yeah, totally. And I guess maybe it's a little different for advertising versus branding. We're basically communicating a company's voice to an audience. So in certain ways, it's very similar. But advertising, you're working in a way in a bit more specific of a framework where it's like one message we need to get across at one point in time rather than a system that's supposed to serve a company over time. So I think it would make sense that the approaches are a little bit different.
We have done a bunch with Nike, specifically Nike Chicago and things like that, and kind of launching a couple of different collectives and storytelling around like some of their local initiatives. I think the meat of the work that I would say is probably the most interesting is the work that I've done with like Jordan Brand holistically. For Jordan Brand, we're part of, honestly, the biggest moment, in my opinion, in Jordan Brand history over the last 5 years, which was The Last Dance. During The Last Dance, I'm not sure if you heard the lore of it, but it wasn't really supposed to come out at that time. It came out during the
time.
Really? Because there was like nothing else to put
out. Because it was pandemic.
Pandemic era. People are just like wanting stuff. Okay, this is the perfect time to launch this documentary. The Jordan Brand team came to us and was just like, we need to build content around this. This is our moment to shine on social, get a bunch of followers, tell the narrative and story history of Jordan. We did just that. We're just thinking like, how do we really connect to the next generation of athletes while bringing in the past ones? We created shoulder content. So interview series that came after The Last Dance that happened on like a Monday, where we actually interviewed people who were either featured in it or people who were tangentially related to it. Because the way we viewed it was influence is nothing if it doesn't impact the people and the culture that surrounds you. While Michael Jordan's legacy is ironclad, shout out to us as young Chicago kids, what does that mean for the next generation of fans? Like, we got to talk about what it means to a Jason Tatum or what it means to even like a DJ Khaled. How are they influenced by all the stuff that happened in the 90s and around the Bulls during that moment? And during that time, it was a lot of, okay, let's shoot some content of our influencers, our creators, and our talent who are at home. And they can tell their own story and showcase how they're living that legacy today. Mm-hmm. That's some work that, like, in my opinion, always stood out from that time.
Yeah, cool. And what did you find? Like, how is it influencing? Or how are these contemporary influencers impacted by it?
Yeah, I think the resounding narrative was this idea that pushing yourself is something that is innate when someone else brings it out of you. And that greatness and that talent isn't just defined by the people and places, but impact across all different mediums. I think the most interesting conversation came between Ray Allen and Spike Lee. Those are two of my favorite athletes, but we had this thing called the Encore. So it was like a weekly five weeks content series spanning across different social platforms. I think IG, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at the time, like created like 25 videos out of it. And we would live stream it and 10 million engagements, 20 million video views. But the conversation they had was rooted in kind of the implications of seeing greatness unfold and what that inspires you to do after you see it. And for Spike, it's obviously he was in the midst of it. But then you have someone like a Ray Allen who is like, yo, I saw that and I thought I can do the same thing. And I'm a big LeBron fan. So the idea that he was inspired enough to like take a big shot in a moment that extended LeBron's championship run is something that I'm always be grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. And to tie it back to what we were talking about earlier, it's really cool to think about the Caitlin Clark and these stars that are so popular right now in the WNBA having in 20 years, there'll be the same conversation about their influence. Totally. I'm curious to hear a little bit more about your team. And again, because I'm from kind of a different side of the creative industry, and I'm curious what it's like working on some of these big projects. What's the dynamic within the team?
Day to day, I run a pod of strategists, and they vary based off an account. There might be a few on Gatorade. There might be a few on Stanley. There might be a few on Google, et cetera, Jordan Brand. And then we collaborate across different departments. So when we think about it, there's the AMs and the PMs, accounts and project managers, and then there's creative and then there's production, right? Our job is to actually work day to day with every single one of them from the initial briefing all the way to execution. I think when our role functions the best, specifically mine, is when I'm in service to all those roles. As a strategist, it is not only writing the brief, but it's anticipating those needs. It's pushing a creative or strategic POV through and making sure that's through line for everything that we do. But it's also serving up inspiration. It's dropping that video or that song to them when they're just like, I can't really break through. Again, serving that emotional thing up to them, but really acting as a problem solver for them in that creative way. So a good example of that is really some of the work that we did across the board for Jordan Brand, right? So I'm not the strategist that like drops the brief and walks away. I'm not throwing my hands up and saying like, we're done. It's really like, hey guys, these are all the commercials that Jordan has done over the last 5 years. These are things that we really enjoy out of it. This is the social conversation that came out of it. How do we talk to these people while accomplishing the ask of the client? So that's kind of the dynamic. It's a little bit of a gopher. It's a little bit of a leader. It's a little bit of a problem solver, but yeah, it's a unique role for sure.
Yeah. And it sounds like a lot of research as well.
A ton. Before this, I was a journalist and people ask me all the time, it's like, what are the skills to do your job? And I think there's really three skills. It's you have to be inquisitive. You have to keep asking why. I say ask why three times. You have to know how to write. That's really important. But third, it is also you have to realize that like, our job is to have an answer. Doesn't mean that we have the best answer. Sometimes you just have to be clear in the direction that you want to go and know that that might take shape in different ways.
Right. And what would you say is the part of the job that you like the most?
I think the part of the job that I like the most is really that collaboration. I have this on my wall. It's how can you make today the most collaborative day ever? I love the storytelling aspect of it. I know that I can't necessarily do every single thing. if I can tell this one part of the story and this person can take it a little bit further, how great can that be? I like working with people, challenging them, being challenged myself. I think that's like the best part of the job for sure.
Yeah, for me too. I think I even said this to you when we first spoke, but for me, it's really all about the people that I work with. That's kind of how we spend our time at the end of the day, is the people and the process. And so for me, it's the most important thing is working with good people and being able to have these really exciting, cool, challenging, creative collaborations, including with the clients. For me, that's what makes the job fun and worth it.
It's the best when it's with the clients, honestly, because sometimes, as always, they are the people with the keys. When you can really break through to them, I think that's something unique.
Mm-hmm. And how does your process with clients work? Is it very formal? Is it more collaborative? I'm curious how you guys work with them.
Carrie, I might be one of the most informal people that you will ever meet. For those who are listening, I am wearing a hat and this Lithuania tie-dye t-shirt. And I feel myself as a pretty informal person. But when it comes to collaborating with clients, my wife, Yvette, my friends, even my coworkers would describe me as kind of honest to a fault.
Okay.
Yeah. My favorite story about one of my former clients, who is now one of my best friends, is essentially, I'm not going to say the client, but we were working on a brief. And she brought me into the process as she was writing the brief to the larger agency team. And she always tells it like this. She's like, Tony said that, hey, this is good, but it's not great. And apparently I told her, quote, you're too smart for this to be so bad. End quote. I wouldn't call us friends at the time. We were definitely just colleagues. She was my client. She took it in stride. And the way she tells it is that that challenge, that was something that she took on. And that allowed her to work collaboratively and make an amazing brief. I like to think of it as like that kind of stuff is like a two-way street.
Yeah, totally. And you just make the work better. You did her a favor. Feedback is a gift, I really think. I would love if someone says that to me. I was really into boxing for a long time, and I would love getting yelled at a gym by trainers. Like, hell yeah. Makes me go harder.
I agree. I think that's like a product of us being former athletes in that way. That collaboration being a two-way street. And I don't know. This is something I always ask people when I first meet them. Client, friend, more colleague than anything else. Is like, what do you want to get out of the work? What do you want to get out of your career? And then how can I help you achieve that? I want to be your accomplice in that. And that might be becoming a better brief writer. That might be giving better agency feedback. Or it really might be using whatever you're currently doing as a springboard to get your next job. If you allow someone like myself to like be a part of that process, I'm the best accomplice that you'll ever have. We'll reverse engineer your success, and I'm here for you. I take that as something that I want to offer to someone else, right? I can't really give much, but I can give my time and I can give my perspective, my POV. When clients, friends, family kind of entrust me with that, I'm like, cool, that makes me feel good. So yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I've also been told many times in professional, well, mostly personal settings, that I can be too direct. So I think it's the same honest to a fault kind of vibe. I think we're just real with people. And I think it can also, it can really make the work better.
Make the work better and your relationship better, right? Listen, I want it too. I want someone to come to me and be like, yo, that brief did not hit the mark. Yo, tell me that my creative and my strategy is not it. I don't really care what you tell me as long as you tell me. And then we can work through it together. So yeah, I'm right there.
Yeah, totally. Totally. What's the most difficult feedback you've gotten and how did you manage it?
Wow. That's a great question. The most difficult feedback I've gotten is, and this is really vulnerable, so everyone listening, is that when I'm in it, I'm in it. And when I'm not, I'm not. And the reason why that's the most difficult feedback I've ever gotten is not because I don't have the potential to do the thing, is that people can see the switch when I turn down the momentum and steam. I have a coach, and one of the things that we've kind of work on is, I think that this is, oh my God, I'm going to sound so ridiculous. I think work-wise, I can operate at like 150. And I think most people operate at like 90 to 80. When I go to 100, it feels to other people that I'm going lower because I work so much and so hard. People notice that a lot more. And while the work's good, they just know that I'm personally not invested. And I think that that's the touch that they really enjoy, is like the personal investment to every single thing I touch. So that's kind of the hardest feedback, because I think juggling expectations is something that's out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily quality of the work, but just like the intensity every single time.
Mm-hmm. And what are the things that make you in that space of going 150? What are the things that really motivate you?
I think shared ambition. One thing that will derail the best person is, hey, we sold in this concept and it's so amazing. Last minute, 24th hour, someone comes back and says, I don't like it. Change every single thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, damn, we just sold this thing in. We just made it. You even liked it. And then you're saying you don't like it anymore. And I think that kind of, it's not the pressure of like having to do it again. It's like the amount of times you have to do it again. That's one part. I think the other part is I love sports. I think I've been working in sports my entire career. Whether I was a journalist, whether I was doing production things, or now as a strategist, like, not that I'm not interested in other things, but like my passion is telling stories for people who kind of have the same background and same upbringing as me. When my passions align, I'm giving 150% because I know that one kid who's going to see it in the back of their, like, their mom's minivan, who's going to be like me, might do something big.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm doing things that like, selling liquor or like pushing things that I'm not super invested in, not the quality of work diminishes, but my passion for it diminishes.
Yeah, yeah, I totally get that. I know you were an athlete, so it's an obvious tie to why you're still working in sports and why you love working in sports. But I'm curious, from the advertising, marketing, creative side, what about working in that area of sports motivates you? Tell me why specifically you like working in sports.
I think the reason why I like working in sports is because really athletes are like the last great celebrities. They're the last great icons that we currently have.
Mm-hmm.
Must-see TV. My grandmother taught me how to read by reading the Sun-Times, more specifically Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics.
I was obsessed with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We have a lot in common.
So much in common.
Yeah.
Growing up, I was like, wow, these folks are amazing. And they're fictional. They have deep stories. To me, the reason why comics are so great in relation to sports, I promise, is because the storylines are endless. Teams themselves are literally teams like they are in comics. Like the Avengers have a million iterations, but so do the Yankees, or so do the Bulls. It's really cool to be a part of like a living legacy and history like that, that is actually real. When I look at athletes and I look at sports, I just think about a new story to connect to this generation. And I'm just like, how do I be a part of that? How do we be a part of elevating that? Because there's a lot of divisiveness in the world, and not to sound so ignorant to the things that are real, but I do feel like when you're at a Liberty game, you don't know who's sitting next to you, and you think that they understand your values or things that you care about. But for a second, they're booing Asia Wilson because we want to take the lead. Those are things that I really appreciate. So I just want to be a part of that, really.
I absolutely love that comparison. I had never thought of sports in that way, of this never-ending story. And it's so true. And I think it's like, I think there are three things in life that you really unify people in this way, which are sports, music, and food. And there's just something so powerful about the impact that sports over the long term, like you were saying, have on a culture, but also the individuals, like we were talking about earlier, at certain moments in time, and how they even far outside of their sport have an impact on what people think politically or stylistically. I mean, Jordan's outfits, watching The Last Dance, I was just like, these outfits are epic. Like, that's something I had kind of forgotten about from my 90s Chicago childhood. And all of that's back now. Gen Z loves the 90s. I don't know. I think about Megan Rapinoe and her impact politically over the past 5 years or so. And like, I mean, the WNBA in general, really leading with Black Lives Matter, and just how sports have so much impact it's such a special space to work in. And that's for sure something that really motivates me.
100%. I'm right there. And I wholly agree. And probably fortunately or unfortunately, you don't get that in other industries and keep throwing alcohol and liquor underneath the bus. But like, they want to be a part of that. That's why they are the official sponsors of XYZ, is because they understand the gravity in which that brings. So I'm right there.
Yeah, totally. And I just think it's awesome that you started as an athlete, Division I athlete, which to me is very, very impressive as someone who was always a mediocre athlete, and then have continued this career in sports. Did you study journalism, or what was it like to kind of go from running track to working in sports?
I didn't. I really wanted to, believe it or not. The best journalism program in the Chicagoland area is Northwestern. And while I'm a lot of things, I'm not smart enough to get into Northwestern, at least not at the time. I studied English and always wanted to be a great American writer. I have a whole bunch of novels that are half finished that my wife encourages me to finish. If you see that, that's all these books down there and up there. Like, we're voracious readers. But that transition was really just trying to find what else I was good at. And that led to writing and journalism. I think after I got into journalism, I really enjoyed it. I wasn't the best writer. My editors are probably listening to this, and my friends are probably listening to this. And I'm just like, Tony was a great storyteller. He wasn't the best writer. I could find those nuggets, and I can find an insight, and I can kind of transform that. And I kind of wandered my way into a job like this. I got lucky. I didn't know it existed. And I think that's part of it. I tell my wife all the time that our family business, because she works in TV and film, isn't sports. Our family business is creativity. And it was always trying to find that at that outlet to be an athlete and compete within the world of creativity. And I just didn't know there was a space for me, which is advertising.
Yeah, totally. I didn't either. It's not something, I mean, when we were growing up, it's like, I didn't even know design was a career. I had no idea. I studied women and gender studies. And I was like, what do I do now? And then, I don't know, years later, I've had this big focus on women's sports, and it kind of came full circle in a certain way of like just really establishing my worldview. But yeah, I feel like, I mean, young people, it's, and maybe people are learning more now, but at least when we were growing up, it was like, I feel like nobody knew what any career outside of the standard doctor, lawyer, something like was, or teacher, I don't know.
And not to sidetrack this at all, but I think that's like a mega thesis that I've been working on in life right now, is like the rise of DIY. I was just having this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine about magazines. And he's like, I think magazines are coming back. He just saw the GQ covers. They look amazing. The Gen Z is going to love them. And I'm like, I have nieces and nephews. I have 9 of them. I don't think any of them have ever picked up a magazine in their entire life. The reason why I bring that up is because now if a kid wants that, they can just go on Instagram. Or if a kid wants a shirt, they can go and design it themselves. They have access to things that we, in our youth, we never did. So they know what strategy is. They know what design is. They know how to use Adobe way better than, or before we ever knew they even existed. So now as I think about a younger version of me, I'm like, oh, I would have found this quicker. Who knows how good, or if I would have left this in the past, I would be in my age right now.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's really interesting to think about too. I switched careers, as I mentioned. I didn't study design in undergrad and did like kind of a DIY approach. Like I did basically like a boot camp type program 3 years after undergrad in design. And I feel like that kind of thing has become so much more common. But it's really interesting to think about just how much more access there is to information. And to kind of bring it back to your work, I'm kind of curious, at least just the spots that I've watched of yours are like, some were for Instagram, some were for YouTube, some more like traditional seeming like TV ads. When you're working on these campaigns, how are you thinking about kind of new media or new approaches?
Yeah, we have an amazing group creative director at Laundry Service. His name is Larry Gordon. He's one of the smartest, most talented people that I know and get to call a friend. Every day he challenges us and says, how do we hack this? He comes from like an innovation background and he's just like, cool, we're going to make a Instagram spot, but what does that mean? How can we use a tool to make something new or interesting? So an example is, yes, the TVC that Shia Day made for the new Is It In You, the relaunch of that, that went live and it was great and it was amazing. But they had like this chant that came through with the Lamar Jackson version of the TVC. Well, we're like, how do we use that to our advantage? And yes, you can make a TikTok challenge and all that kind of stuff and hopefully get people using it. But it was like, okay, let's embed this into the sounds that you can use on Instagram, actually allowing it to be like our profile song and like working with a DistroKid and try to hack the medium to better serve the content experience. And I think those are moments where, yes, someone might downplay social media, but if more kids are on social than they're watching traditional linear TV, we're doing something a little bit different or reaching them in a way that you never could. I think of the medium agnostic and more of the delivery system, i.e. how can we give them something new and give them a feeling that we had, again, the reverse engineer. I remember being like the J.G. Wentworth commercials as a kid. They were always on in Chicago. J.G. Wentworth, 877 cash now. And those things are embedded into our mind, but you don't really get that on social anymore because kids aren't watching commercials. Our job is to, how do we make that version of it? Yeah, it's just interesting delivery system in that way.
Yeah, totally. I know every time I go back to Chicago for Christmas and I'm watching TV and some of these old jingles come up, so still, it's such a flashback.
Yeah.
So you said at the beginning of our conversation that you've been working in kind of youth sports area or with youth as your audience. I'm always curious when I talk to other millennials or people older than us, are there like young people on your team that are telling you what's up on the internet? Or like, are you going out and talking to these kids who are playing basketball now?
Both. So I'm a strong believer that you can be into it and know what's happening at any age, but I'm also a strong believer in that you could be washed. We were having this conversation at the office the other day and I was like, hey, youths, that's a much better way. But I was talking to some Gen Z on the team and I was just like, what do you think of this person? And they've never heard of that person. This person's like a big cultural hype person, but they're more millennial skewing. It's a really interesting ad, but I don't know who that person is because they're not ingrained within their culture. And that's like an eye opener for me. So when working with things, recently doing drops for Gatorade, which is essentially our culture to commerce program where we're trying to create products in the real world that impact the brand to grow greater affinity. And when we think about the people that we work with, we're like, do they move the needle for Gen Z? Is the kid going to want to wear this thing? Or is the kid going to love this person and the storytelling technique? Or are we just talking to ourselves? Always have someone on your team or multiple people, ideally, who can give that perspective. But I think the other side of the coin is, as I mentioned, I have 9 nieces and nephews. For the ones that can talk, because some of them are little babies, I ask them and I'll be like, what do you think of XYZ? And they'll be like, lame, tough, etc. No riz. They'll be like, that's it. And when they see it, they know it. And they don't have the words to articulate why. And that's fine. I can find the words for them. But having that gut check of being like, that's not it, is also super important.
Totally. And it's interesting to think about with this framework of sports as this never-ending story about, I imagine some of your campaigns, the target is broad, like it might span generations.
Sometimes it does. And I think that's a good thing and a bad thing. I'm a strong believer in serving the audience that needs your product the most, not trying to do like a general swath of anybody who might like you, because you're aggressive to the mean. But yeah, sometimes it's like that for sure.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely is always harder because of these huge differences. So this has been so fun. I have one final question for you. What are 3 other companies in the realm of sports that are doing creative things that you love or that you find inspiring?
First off, Carrie, I'll get to them, but I want to get to you real quick. You're amazing. I appreciate this platform. This has been kind of like a blast from the past in a lot of different ways. And it's great that we have so many different interests and commonalities. Thank you for allowing me to share a little bit of what I know. Right now, Adidas, from a storytelling perspective, the work that they're doing with Anthony Edwards, as we're talking about athletes as the last great superheroes. Like, the best thing about superheroes is that they have flaws and that they show their personality and that they're not afraid to do that. That's when a brand leans into it. So the work that Adidas has been doing over the last year, specifically with their signature shoe, the A1, incredible. Like the different avenues, culture, being reactive, getting ahead of things. It's insane. And I think that that is something that, again, they recreated something. They reverse engineered what Spike and Mike did in the 90s and actually made it modern for today's athlete. So I just think it's really simple, really smart. And I'm just looking forward to like, what's the next iteration of that? From a league and community perspective, I love what Athlos is doing right now. So for those who don't know, Athlos, it's a all women's track league. Essentially, it just launched this past year. They had like Megan Thee Stallion at track meet. And as a person who is a former track athlete and big Olympic track person, I've been to a lot of track meets in my life, like probably more than I can count. While the product is kind of a rainy, like overcast day, so like it wasn't the best running per se, like no records were broken, the experience was the best experience I've ever had. And I've been to two Olympic Games.
Oh, wow.
It was actually insane. And I love what they're doing about bringing people together and giving new opportunities. And the branding, immaculate. It's some of the best branding and everything out there and the storytelling they use to build around it. I'm looking forward to seeing how they kind of push that a little bit further. There's other players in the space, Grand Slam Track and all those other people that are like going to be carrying that torch. But I'm looking forward to seeing what Athlos does. It's really cool. And then from a product standpoint, I think about white spaces. If you were to ask me, Tony, what would you do 3 years ago, knowing that the rise of women's sports was going to take off? I'd say I create the first women's sports brand that allows me to talk to every single consumer in different markets. And I'd own that. Well, someone did that. Esther Wallace over at Player Society. Player Society is insane. The design work, which she does mostly all by herself, the quality of the product is insane. The fact that obviously it's reactive to like who wins and all that kind of stuff and different partnerships. Like she might be, in my opinion, the hardest working woman in sports right now when it comes to product and apparel. And I just really admire the fact that she's dabbling. Obviously she has a sport, the basketball background, but she's working with US women's national team and she's diving into different areas, not really pigeonholing herself necessarily into basketball, but telling a holistic story and building real connections with the players. So like it's easy to support her and her work. So those are three brands. One, I rock Player Society. I went to Athlos, obviously rewind and send those AE videos to my creative team. But yeah, I get inspired by those almost on a daily.
Awesome. I love it. Now I want to go check out Player Society's latest drops. I got some of her shorts at a Liberty game a couple years ago.
She's awesome. Amazing.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to seeing the next things that you put out. And I think I'm going to YouTube some Ninja Turtles this weekend.
You and me both. Carrie, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Tony.